Hello and welcome to Mega City Film Club. I'm Eamon Clark. I'm in London and I'm with Damian Lebatsky. Good morning, Damian.
Hey, good morning.
So here we are with a special episode of the Film Club. No Conrad this time.
No Conrad.
Because as Conrad revealed a couple of weeks ago on the podcast that he doesn't do horror films. Mm-hmm. So I've brought in a stunt double and it's Damian. You're the horror person.
I can take stunt double and we have a blessing from Conrad, so that's all fine for me.
Great. So also I should mention that today, because Film Club appearances count towards your five stars, today Damian is earning his five-star T-shirt and in fact has got five-star T-shirt in front of him. So
thank you very much for T-shirts. They're really cool. Fifth time recording with you. That's an achievement for me. Thank you very much.
No trouble. So delighted. Welcome to the Five Star Club. We were pointing out before we started recording, we've done all of these face-to-face at various obscure London locations. Yeah. This time we're in some sort of
old warehouse building.
Yeah, or sex dungeon. I'm not sure which.
Well, you know.
We can't sort out the lighting, so we're in this sort of pink glow, which is very weird. But there you go.
No pink flamingos, though.
Right. Let us get straight to it. Let's get on with it. No more bants. Tell us the film or series of films that we're going to be talking about today.
So today we'll be talking about 28 Days, Years series by Danny Boyle and Alex Garland. Latest movie in franchise been released a couple months ago. I believe it's a great movie, one of the best movies released this year. So we're going to focus on that. But we also will be talking about entire franchise, starting with 28 Days Later, which was released 2002, I believe. I haven't watched it back then. I believe I watched that movie just before I came to London or after that. So right. Around 2006. So that's the topic for today.
Okay, great. Well, I will give out a brief spoiler warning. We'll try not to do major spoilers on the latest film. I think the first two films are fair game now. They've been out long enough.
Yeah.
But we will do them. So before we get to 28 Years Later, we're just going to do, as you've said, a quick recap. Mm-hmm. 28 Days Later, 2002, by Alex Garland and Danny Boyle, starring Cillian Murphy, Naomi Harris, Brendan Gleeson, Christopher Eccleston. Currently available, I think, on the BBC iPlayer to watch for free here in the UK.
Yeah, that's correct.
A good film for you to watch when you arrived in London because, of course, notable for its very eerie, deserted London in the opening scenes, which is fantastic.
Yes, so as I mentioned before, when I moved to London, that was one of the movies I watched, and it was so eerie watching all those scenes which were recorded in central London, in very central London. I believe they had to close down those areas for an hour. Police was involved. It's very unsettling to watch even now.
It's really weird. Very clever how they did it on a very limited budget to do that, as you say, literally closing down streets for short periods of time. Very eerie. Of course, it's the rage infected
infected,
which give us some very brutal scenes. These are very fast infected, some terrifying scenes throughout the film. And of course, it's also Naomi Harris, Cillian Murphy, Brendan Gleeson, sort of before they were really big names.
Yeah, for Murphy, I think that was one of the first big movie he's been doing.
Yeah.
And he was discovered during that movie. Definitely. What else about this movie? Because I've been watching some extra scenes, and how they record. Let's say, you know, there is this scene when there is a bus. And they record that scene just before 9/11 has happened. Danny Boyle said, you know, after that they wouldn't be allowed to shoot that scene, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is true, because you get lots of sort of urban legends about film shoots, but I heard that they didn't really have permission to put that bus on its side.
Yeah.
But Danny Boyle really wanted to do it, and he said to his team, can we get that bus on its side, film the scene and get it back up in 30 minutes? And they said yes.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah.
You know, astonishing. Yeah, I mean, 28 Days Later is... It's a great film, isn't it? It is
great. Yeah. Even when you watch it now, it has this very like grim look because it was recorded, you know, pre-digital era. And you have like almost like, you know, that found footage experience when watching this movie.
Yeah.
Also, it's not only about, you know, zombies or, you know, apocalypse or infection. It's about, you know, how human behave in that extreme situation. And as we know from many different, you know, movies, books and comics, humans are not that great when coping in apocalypse situation.
Yeah. As ever, the real monsters turn out to be us.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, you know, there is that fascinating moment at the end of the film where Cillian Murphy is, let's say he's on a rip-roaring attack mode,
yeah,
and Naomi Harris's character cannot tell whether or not he's infected or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brendan Gleeson is also great. This scene when he got infected, it's very emotional.
Yeah, it's powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay, so that's 28 Days Later. Mm-hmm. Also, in a way, I mean, I know they'd done things before, but Danny Boyle and Alex Garland sort of made them big as well. 5 years later, we got 28 Weeks Later.
Yeah.
Written by Rowan Joffe, Juan Carlos Fresadillo, E.L. Levine and Jesus Olmo. Directed by Juan Carlos Fresadillo. Starring Robert Carlyle, Rose Byrne, Imogen Poots, Jeremy Renner, Idris Elba... Again, a great cast.
Great cast, but unfortunately, they just don't deliver. I mean, I guess they play what they got in script, but there is not much in the script. Let's be honest. The whole setup is kind of stupid. Like, you know, let's bring people back to infected London. Let's clear this area out, and you know, let's start over. It's kind of stupid premise, I would say.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, why would you do that in the first place?
Yes,
because we are Americans, you know. We can do those things. We can start our new colony in UK, which is a funny thing when you think about it.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Why would you declare London Docklands a safe zone
and
start bringing people back in? And Rose Byrne plays the army doctor in it, and I have to say, as you know, as a former doctor, that the medical procedures and techniques pretty shoddy, you know.
Really? Okay.
Infection control procedures not great, Rose.
You know, it's just a movie. Let's move on. We don't care about this stuff, although there are a couple good shots in that movie, definitely. When they're setting up, you know, Docklands Airport, and their base, that's I really like. I think the beginning of the movie it's quite cool.
I mean, I think it looks great.
Yeah.
The scenes of attacks on London, the scenes of gas going through the street. Mm-hmm. There's a helicopter.
Oh, yes, that scene. Yeah, you're right.
There's a helicopter with a field full of infected zombies.
Yeah.
And does what, you know, you think a helicopter possibly, maybe shouldn't actually do in that situation. But, you know, what the people have paid for a helicopter to do.
It's kind of like a something from a game from Call of Duty.
Yes.
I would say.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's very gamey stuff.
Yeah, it's very zombie movie gamey stuff. Yeah. I think it looks great. Of course, it's got an ending which suggests that the infection has broken out beyond the shores of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
An ending which they sort of have to hand wave away in the third film, which we'll get to in a moment. Mm-hmm. But it is the sequel that nobody really thinks is all that great.
Honestly, I remember watching this movie, I think, when it was released.
Yeah.
And I rewatched it just because, you know, for preparation for the podcast. But I didn't remember anything from that movie. Nothing. Right. I just remember there is something, you know, Americans came over, you know, they have all this, you know, military with them, and that's pretty much what I remember. This is a movie you don't really need to watch. Let's just skip it and carry on to the third movie. And there is a waste of such a talent like Idris Elba, especially.
Yeah.
Who else is there? Jeremy Renner. Exactly.
Yeah.
And there is nothing in this character. Like, he plays this, you know, like, sniper, very generic American guy. There's nothing there.
Yeah. It does have the great opening sequence where there's a group of survivors trapped in a house. Mm-hmm. Robert Carlyle and his wife.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's classic. Another classic zombie movie.
It is.
The house. You know, the boarded up house.
Yeah.
And the age-old problem in zombie movies, which is even if the windows are boarded up, don't stand next to them.
Mm-hmm. No.
When a character's standing next to a window, everybody's going, no. We know what's going to happen. But anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay, so 28 weeks later, so. It's on Amazon Prime at the moment, so you can watch that one as well. I have watched both of them in preparation for this.
Ending with night vision is quite cool as well. Yeah. Shot in London Tube, some of the stations. I would say if you want to see some like good visuals, then go for it. But you don't want to watch that movie for story or characters, definitely.
Okay. Well, let's get to the main event. From 2025, obviously, 28 years later, written by Alex Garland again, back, directed by Danny Boyle, they're back. Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Jodie Comer, Ralph Fiennes, and introducing the young Alfie Williams as Spike. So, in the movie, it's 28 mm-hmm. years later.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What is... Now, people might not have seen this one. So, what is the sort of setup at the start of this movie?
It's kind of Brexit in reverse, I would say, in a zombie apocalypse, post-apocalypse setting. So war decided to move on. They fought the infection and they were quite successful as a, you know, globally as a humanity. But for some reason, it didn't work out in Britain. We don't really know why, but Britain is a no-go zone pretty much. Infection is still there. Which is, when you think about it, it's a weird, like, why they haven't fought infection here, but okay. I think it's a commentary about Brexit and...
There's a lot of Brexit stuff.
It is.
Britain cut off from Europe.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this kind of setting is not, it's not about, you know, we not want people coming in, we want people keep inside, yeah. not get out. So that's the setup. And we have this, you know, village... It doesn't say exactly where it's based, I believe.
Lindisfarne. It's off the northeast coast.
Oh, okay. Cumberland,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's on Lindisfarne Island, which is cut off from the mainland.
Oh, yes, you're right. You're
by
right.
a causeway
Sorry.
That floods twice a day.
Okay, yeah. So we have this village, couple hundred people living there, going off with their lives, and they kind of stuck in this, you know, like old British setting. They still, I don't think they have a television there, but they have those like certain ceremonial things to do.
Yeah.
Like even, you know, 50s Britain, I would say. That's what they've been left with, really, with this, you know, old culture. They never moved on. They don't have, you know, cell phones, mobiles. They don't have socials, which is another, you know, commentary about the world. The whole setup is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I've made this point on Film Club previously about apocalypse, that in Australia with the Mad Max films mm-hmm. and in America... Mm-hmm. It's assumed that after the apocalypse, everybody gets a punk haircut, chains and tattoos and
yeah.
leathers.
Yeah.
Whereas in Britain, after the apocalypse, we go back to the old ways and yeah. we get very sort of medieval and folk horror at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, this village cut off from the mainland mm-hmm. and everything has gone back to the old ways. Mm-hmm. The causeway being cut off by the sea is a nice touch and leads to some incredible moments in the film. And also... because there's no light pollution, beautiful scenes of the night sky, you know, really gorgeous to look at.
Yes.
But inevitably, you can't just have the film be about the group on the island. You have to have them go to the mainland at some point, don't mm-hmm. you?
Yeah.
Which is what happens.
Which is exactly what happens, yeah. Yeah, I agree totally about, you know, how gorgeous a movie looks like, especially when they shoot those scenes in green areas, in the woods. It's so large, it's so bright. Have you seen Garland's Men?
No, I hear it's great, but yeah.
It's very unsettling movie.
Unsettling,
especially
yeah.
the ending, but it reminds me of how gorgeous this movie looks.
Right.
There's so much green and like different green. I don't even know how to describe it because, you know, it's kind of like a visual thing, but it reminds me of Men.
Right. Okay. The performances in this film. So we've got Aaron Taylor-Johnson as the dad, Alfie Williams as his son Spike, Jodie Comer playing his mom, and there's, again, spoilers, but Jodie Comer's character is not well. There's something wrong with her. What did you make of all the performances in this?
All performances are great, but I would say Alfie Williams as a first-time actor really delivers. This is what I've been thinking recently, like, what makes a good actor a good actor? And, you know, Alfie Williams is just fresh. You don't have that relation to his other roles. This is, you know, a freshman doing his performance. And after watching this movie, I realized, like, he plays this character. He is this character. This is, like, you know, top performance from him. Also, Ralph Fiennes really delivers. You can tell he's having a lot of fun when making this movie.
Yeah. I'll ask you about his character in just a moment. But before I do that, I just want to ask you about The Infected, because this movie gives us some more details of The Infected, and in particular introduces the sort of crawling bloaters.
Yeah.
Covered in slime,
yeah.
Slow. Again, that does feel a bit like something from a video game, you know. But it also gives us the alphas.
Yeah.
These enormously powerful leaders of their packs of infected. What did you make of the sort of expansion of the infected world?
I mean, it's a logical thing to do to, you know, after 28 years, how many of those infected you would have, really?
Yeah.
How many of them would survive, you know, being on this, you know, 24-hour rage mode all the time? You know, how they survived. So we have those, as you mentioned, those blotters, crawlers. They eat pretty much everything what they can find. Earthworms and, you know, any kind of, you know, I would say food they can find. And we have those, you know, massive alphas. They're super fast, they're super strong. They're gonna kill you, they're gonna rip off your head if they get you. And we have a taste of that in a movie.
Yeah. There are some very gruesome scenes.
There are, yeah.
And they usually involve an alpha doing something horrendous to people while also displaying, because they're not wearing any clothes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And these alphas.
There are alphas everywhere, let's say.
Yes. So Aaron Taylor-Johnson takes his son onto the mainland to teach him about how to deal with the infected. And then this leads, of course, Spike, the kid, having to take his, because he's heard that there's a doctor on the mainland.
Yeah.
A doctor with a strange reputation, who lives by himself, manages to survive on the infected mainland. And yet, because Spike's mom is ill, he takes his mom, completely breaking protocol, breaks out of the island, goes to the mainland to try and find Ralph Fiennes' character.
Yeah.
Now, as you said, I think Ralph Fiennes having a whale of a time in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can tell.
From the trailers, I got the impression that Ralph Fiennes' doctor was going to be sort of like Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now, and that he was completely
delusional. Yeah, yeah.
And he's building these weird, he's boiling the bodies to make the skeletons and then building this weird bone garden or this bone forest, whatever it is.
Bone sanctuary.
Yeah. But actually, when they find him, he's quite surprising. Actually, I was surprised.
Yeah, I was too. Yeah.
Having seen the trailers, I was expecting something different. And I'll point out, as a former GP, he's playing a former GP. His retirement's going slightly different from my retirement.
Well, you know, that's what people do in post-apocalyptic setting.
And, I mean, what did you make of him when they finally encounter him?
Well, you just mentioned trailer and can we focus on that trailer for next couple of minutes? So there was a trailer released earlier this year, and they use boots from Rudyard Kipling.
Yeah.
And this trailer was, it was one of the best trailers I've seen in my life. I believe the last trailer, which was so good, was a Mad Max trailer for 2015 movie. Right. I got completely obsessed with this trailer. I watched it like 50 times in maybe 3-4 days. I couldn't stop watching because it was just so good. Like, it's old school trailer. You don't have this, you know, like 80 musics remix. You don't have, you know, slow-mo. It's old school trailer. It gets you into the movie. It shows you like a couple bits and pieces, and it gets you interested, which is, you know, exactly what trailer supposed to do. And you know, they use the that boots. This was like something I dig up a little bit more. Why they did that? And it wasn't even an artistic choice. It was from marketing, which is a very interesting thing. It didn't come from Danny Boyle.
No, I thought that was fascinating. So they found this, as you say, the marketing people who were making the trailer, they found this American actor reading the poem Boots by Rudyard Kipling.
Yeah.
I think the recording is from
1915.
Yeah. Right. And it's this almost manic performance.
It is, yeah.
Of this poem about the despair of being in an army in war.
Mm-hmm.
And they put that over the trailer. You just need to watch the whole the trailer and the poem.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, I believe Danny Boyle was looking for a piece of music to include to cover a montage on the film, and actually said, no, the marketing guys got this right. We're going to use the poem.
Mm-hmm. They also used a recording of that poem for training a soldier against, you know, torture and interrogation techniques,
right.
Which is another interesting thing. Because, it's so unsettling when you hear that, recording. It just, you know, somebody screaming at your face, you know, how miserable their life is as a soldier. And it just fascinating, you know, they use this kind of that piece of culture, you know, from more than a century ago to promote this movie.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
So watch the trailer. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
It brings us to Dr. Kelson, played by Ralph Fiennes. What did you make of him?
Great character.
It's just amazing.
It is great character. And, you know, he's, you know, from... So my impression from trailer was this is going to be like some... like post-apocalyptic sanctuary he's been building his entire life. He's delusional. He's just crazy mad person. But no, he's a guy who kind of cares, and he's building this monument to memorize all the people who died during the pandemic, really.
Yeah.
That's something. This is like very transgressive thing, because your expectation is very different from what you get in the movie. And also, I would say trailer doesn't deliver, because this is such a good trailer. As I said, one of the best trailers I've ever seen in my life. The movie didn't deliver what the trailer promises you to see, but you get very different movie. So it's not trailer related, if you know what I'm saying. But also, I would say it's a great movie because of this, you know, transgressive factor.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was really taken with Dr. Kelson.
Yeah,
and
because of your experience working as a GP. Okay.
Because, well, I'll tell you, Damien, that one of the things towards the end of my career, I was realizing that the most important thing I could do was kindness to people.
Yeah.
And Dr. Kelson demonstrates kindness to Alfie's mom.
Yeah.
And it's a very touching and emotional part of this film.
It
which
is,
has got these rage-infected zombies around about.
You don't expect that at all. And, you know, this scene... I mean, we're talking about the whole scene when he euthanizes his mom, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly what happens. Because, you know, there is no cure for her. She's got a cancer, brain cancer, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, what are you going to do with that person? I don't even know what to say, because it's so emotional when you watch it. You almost like cry in the cinema when you watch it. It's such a powerful scene. You don't expect something like that from you know, zombie apocalypse movie.
No.
It's very touching. It's very low ground, I would say, super emotional. And this entire setting, you know, this monument built with bones and skulls and everything, it became like. So something what we should do in a real life, instead of, you know, having those, you know, just carved names somewhere in the building. No, we should really build, you know, those skull pyramids.
Yeah.
And because that makes you feel and makes you think about what the war really is.
Yeah.
Why we've been doing such a, you know, terrible things to each other, to other humans.
So I'm going to ask you about the ending of the film.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I'm going to ask you to put them the three to rank the three films in order, perhaps. But before we do that,
mm-hmm.
ostensibly a 2000 AD British invade, so British comics podcast.
Yeah.
Now there's obviously one name in particular that links this film to 2000 AD, which is Alex Garland wrote and helped direct Dread 2012.
Some people say they directed it.
Yes.
Judge Dredd.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly was their first experience directing, I think. His first experience directing. So obviously he's a big 2000 AD fan. That's the connection. Do you see other connections with the sort of stories 2000 AD has told over the years?
With 2000 AD, you know what? The first thing came to mind for me was actually Crossed series.
Yeah, because obviously that's the one we've done.
This is very similar setting, and also Crossed has some spin-offs. So there is a 100+ series which was written by Alan Moore, which I highly recommend. It's not that gore. It's not it's still, you know, quite violent, but not as a main series. But what do you make of it? What's your connection with 2000?
Well,
what are you thinking about?
I mean, I think apart from Alex Garland, I think, as you said, you're quite right. The connection is Crossed by Garth Ennis and is it Jason Burroughs?
Jason Burroughs.
Yeah.
Different writers and artists.
Which I think. Was that the last thing you and I covered a year or so ago?
That was 2 years ago. Last time, what we did last time?
Oh, we know. did we do Punisher Max last time?
We did Punisher Max.
Right,
see,
yeah.
That's five episodes for you. We don't even remember. I mean, I don't remember.
Well, and the thing with Crossed is, in a way, the stories about the Crossed infected themselves are less interesting to me than the stories of humanity trying to survive.
Yeah.
And the fact that even when humanity is trying to survive, there's still moments of people lying, cheating, whatever, stealing from each other. But also the opportunity for kindness as well, which we see in this film.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're right. I think the main connection is actually Crossed rather than 2000 AD.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the movie version of that, yeah.
Except the ending.
Except the ending.
Because the ending is bonkers.
Okay, so we're coming to the ending and we'll try and give a spoiler warning. We'll perhaps try not to mention a certain person's name.
You know, it's quite obvious.
But before that, we've got three 28 Days Later movies so far. Of course, this new one.
Mm-hmm.
They've already filmed the second.
They
part
filmed the second one
of.
And I guess they've been waiting, like, how successful this the first movie is in that series, in the new series. I think it was quite successful. I don't really know the numbers, but I think they've been doing pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. And incredibly well reviewed.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with reviews. You know, you can have like astonishing reviews, and still you don't have people in cinemas.
Yeah, yeah.
It happens more and more often, I would say now.
You said one of the best horror films of the year so far?
I mean, you know, for me, because there is this movement in people's thinking now, like, we don't go to cinema, there are not many great movies. But, you know, so far, 2025 was excellent year for movies for me. I've seen Sinners, I've seen Flow, which is one of the best animations I ever seen. Just yesterday, I watched Weapons,
yes,
which I highly recommend, because it's again, it's a different movie from what your expectation is, especially after, you know, watching trailers. So I would say this is one of the best movies I've seen this year, and one of the greatest horror movies. Although I wouldn't really consider it as a, you know, pure horror. It's horror setting. You know, you have zombie apocalypse and pandemic, but it's really about, as you said, about humanity and, you know, trying to survive in that environment, but not being like gruesome, like just trying to keep up with your humanity and with culture as well, and how those communities can get stuck with old ways, because that's the only thing they have to build up. That's my impression.
Okay, so 28 weeks later, I think everybody agrees is the weakest of the three.
Yeah.
So that's easy to put in last place. Mm-hmm. Of the two now, 28 days later, 28 years later, have you a particular preference at the moment?
That's a really hard choice because, with 28 days, you have those, eerie scenes in London and you have music by, what's the band called?
Is it? Oh, yes. Godspeed.
Godspeed Black Emperor?
Yeah, Godspeed Black Emperor, yeah.
Godspeed You Black Emperor, yeah. So that's a one thing, but again, this movie is very transgressive. What we've been trying to say about humanity, and you have this scene in a bone sanctuary. I would say 28 years,
right.
But it's very fresh for me.
Yeah. It is very fresh. I really enjoyed it at the cinema. I thought I had a great time. I suspect by the time this podcast is out, in this episode releases in 3 weeks' time, it'll probably be available on streaming for people to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Do yourself a favour, if you've not seen the trailer, watch the trailer as well before mm-hmm. you watch the film, because it's almost a trailer. It'll almost drive you mad as well, because it's sort of so intense.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
What we haven't mentioned is the fact that the movie was shot on iPhone.
Yeah.
Although we say it was shot on iPhone, but really they have entire rigs of iPhones. Even when they did those scenes, when they killed those infected, I call them snapshots. They have like, I don't know, 12, maybe 15 iPhones on that rigged.
Yeah.
So you get that, like very snappy kind of feeling. It's not Matrix. It's not slow mo, but it kind of is a little bit. They've been trying to do something different with those scenes, and I think they were very successful.
Yeah, absolutely. The last couple of minutes of this film, 28 years later.
Here we go.
Here we go. Now, basically, Spike, without giving too much away, Spike is on his own at this point, on the island.
Yeah.
He's on the mainland, rather.
Yeah.
And he meets a gang of survivors.
Yeah.
A gang of survivors who are dressed strangely, all wearing blonde wigs and quite a lot of blingy jewellery.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unusual choice, let's say that.
It is.
Yes. Yeah, what did you make of it?
My first reaction in the cinema was, what the fuck? What the fuck I'm watching? Like,
yes.
Seriously, because, you don't expect this kind of ending, okay? Alfie is on his own, as you mentioned, he's trying to survive in the wilderness, trying to find, his way. And we have this gang of... Should we mention the name, or you don't want to do it in your podcast?
I'll say they're all wearing tracksuits, blonde wigs, lots of bling, and they're all in the credits. They're all listed as James or Jimmy.
Well, you know what? For British people, it's quite obvious, but, for foreigners, that might not be a very obvious thing to think about.
Yeah.
But we know the character.
Yes.
And it's crazy. It's like, why would you do that in the movie? Why would you do that? But there is a connection to the very beginning of the movie itself, when this group of kids, they're watching
Teletubbies.
So the setting is 2002. What's been in television in 2002? Just think about all the characters, series, comedians maybe.
Yeah.
And that's what those kids been fed with with the pop culture, and they brought it 28 years later. That's what they got from the pop culture, which is kind of scary thing when you think about it.
And I know I'm not alone in this, but that opening sequence of kids watching television
mm-hmm.
while the initial infection begins, and I think everybody thought that the boy we see is going to turn out to be Aaron Taylor-Johnson, but he's not.
No.
He turns out to be the leader of this gang at the end.
Yes. And you can have some snippets about his character during the movie. Like,
yeah.
You can see some writings on one of the houses. Jimmy was here.
Right.
Jimmy. Hello?
Hello, yeah. Jimmy fixed it, yeah. We will.
Yes.
We will apparently find out more in the next film, which probably is going to be out next year, I guess, if they've already filmed it.
I think it was confirmed it's going to be next year, yeah.
Okay.
What do you think about this ending? Like, was it necessary? Because for me, it wasn't really necessary. I mean, it's setting up for the new movie, but from viewer point of view, do you need that scene at the very end?
My initial thought is exactly the same as yours. It was WTF. It was, that's a very bold and challenging decision you guys have made. But I also thought, well, I'm coming to see the next film now.
Well, you know,
so they
were successful.
In that case, they were successful, yeah. Because I now want to see, well, I'm going to see how you're going to explain that, guys. Okay. I'll quickly mention that there are 28 Days Later comics. Mm-hmm. The Aftermath by Steve Niles and a 28 Days Later comic from Boom Studios, neither of which I could find digitally, so I didn't read them. Mm-hmm. Have you come across any of them?
I've been trying to get them for years and years. They out of print and very hard to find. A couple months ago when movie was released, I've really been trying to get some, but I think, you know, you have two trades and this it costs at least 100 quid for two trades, so that's a steep price for my budget.
Yeah.
At this moment, I would like to read them. Surprisingly, they never reprinted them, which would be an obvious choice for new movie to being released. Maybe there are some rights, laws involved. Like they couldn't do it because it was published by Boom.
Yeah.
So that's not a big publisher. But although I would say they can make some extra buck. When you connect those two things, you know, release of the movie and, you know, new reprint. For some reason, they didn't do it.
Okay. So if anybody knows where you can get those digitally, let us know. Or if they've got a copy that they can lend us, please let us know.
Yeah.
28 Days Later is on BBC iPlayer here in the UK. Watch it. I don't think you need to watch 28 Weeks Later particularly, but it is available on Amazon Prime.
No, let's skip it. You don't need that at all.
But do watch 28 Years Later.
Definitely one of the best movies I've seen in cinema this year. And please go to cinemas. I know, as I said before, many people say there is not many movies in cinemas, good movies in cinemas. I don't agree with that at all. This year was just excellent.
Okay. So that brings us to guest projects, and we were sort of talking about this on the way to our dungeon from the tube station about recent film and television horror stuff that you and I have been watching. Any recommendations for us, Damien?
Recommendation? Yeah, I already did one, which was Weapons.
Weapons, yeah.
Which I watched last night. Almost full cinema in my local cinema at Brixton, Ritzy. So that was fun. That was another experience you don't really get nowadays. Watching movie with other people, and they've been reacting really well.
Yeah.
They were laughing. They got scared. You don't get, and that's experience you can get only in cinema. It's really good movie as well. It's quite long. It's very slow, so might not be for everybody. But I would highly recommend it because it delivers and it plays with those like different horror cliches as well. I'm not sure. Is it the same director as Barbarian?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay, yeah. So that makes sense because Barbarian been playing with those cliches as well.
Yeah.
So it makes completely sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else recently to mention?
There is a series on Channel 4 which is called Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared. This is one of the best mini series and horror stuff I ever seen in my life. I highly recommend it. I watched it 2 or 3 years ago. I don't really remember when it was. It's existential horror. It mixes all kind of, you know, like animation techniques. So you have traditional animation, puppetry, costumes, computer animation as well. It's bizarre. It's weird. It's stuff you don't really see anywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's so unique and original. I would say if you are a horror fan, just go watch it because it deserves so much recognition. And I don't think, you know, people know about this stuff at all. And it's free on Channel 4 app.
Yeah. Okay, right. Well, I will try and put a link to that one in the show notes for this episode, because that one's probably more unusual. So I'll point to that one in the show notes.
What about yourself?
Well, as you know, I've been... I haven't seen Weapons. I haven't seen Bring Her Back yet. I'm probably going to go and see the reboot of I Know What You Did Last Summer, even though those films seem to be pretty bad. as you know, I've been picking off some franchises. As a horror film fan, I think I've seen the first film in most franchises and not gone on to watch the sequels. Mm-hmm. So now I'm trying to knock off a few franchises. I watched all of the Final Destination films, and I think, including the new one, mm-hmm. and I think all apart from the fourth one, I think they're great fun.
Okay. What's the fourth one?
The fourth one is the Indy 500 racetrack one that everybody thinks is the worst of the series.
Okay. I don't even know that one.
That one's not very good.
Okay.
But the others I thought were great fun. I've watched, is it 10 films in the Saw franchise, I think, now?
Maybe even more. I don't know.
Who knows? Anyway, I've watched...
Nobody knows.
Yeah, there might be 11 now, I think, actually. But anyway, I've watched all of the Saw and Jigsaw and Spiral movies.
Congrats.
Yeah, I can tell you that the first one is still great.
Mm-hmm, it is.
And the rest of them are terrible.
I can't say a lot about the rest of it.
Yeah.
Because I think I've seen like maybe one or two.
Wouldn't bother. Yeah, I wouldn't bother. They're not great. The first one retains its greatness, but that apart from that, no. So I'm actually wondering what the next long-running movie horror franchise I should tackle is. And if anybody's got any suggestions, again, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. Tell me which franchise I should now try and do all of them.
Have you seen all the Halloween movies?
No.
Maybe Halloween then.
Yeah, I, you know, I'm such a fan of the original Halloween that I am thinking, and of course I've seen the first three,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen the most recent David Gordon Green three, the modern ones, but the ones in between there, I think I've seen Halloween. Anyway, yes, Halloween might be the next one, and in fact, you know, we're coming up to October, so it might be I'll do the Halloween movies.
It's camp fun, you know, you watch those movies just to see, you know, Jason, how...
Michael.
I'm thinking about different franchises.
Friday the 13th, yeah.
They're all right, I would say. They never been on top of my list. You brought up Bring Her Back as a new horror movie. I wouldn't recommend it. I think it was very average movie for me.
Right.
Some people compare it to Hereditary. It's not even close to Hereditary.
Okay. We're in London. We were supposed to be in London several weeks ago to do this recording, and I was poorly and couldn't make it, because we were going to the Thistlebone 3 signing at the new Forbidden Planet in Camden Town. A signing, I understand, where they had no books.
they had free copies. Somebody fuck it up, like...
somebody messed that one up.
Big way.
So instead, today, there is a signing at Forbidden Planet, Shaftesbury Avenue, Forbidden Planet, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
Where we're going to see, hopefully...
Mike Carey. Yeah.
And he's got a new comic, first issue, which I don't know anything about, actually.
Cul-de-sac. I think that's a horror book as well.
Yeah, I think it is.
I don't know nothing about that, and I don't really buy single issues, but I have some unwritten trades and some Hellblazer trades for him. Actually, that was my big project this year, reading all Hellblazer run, which I almost completed. I'm trying to get volume 20, but it's so expensive. It's going for at least £200 for one trade. It's stupid prices. Maybe it's gonna get reprint at some point, but it's just, you know, £200. This is a very big no-no for my budget.
Right. Well, Hellblazer. Garth Ennis, we may be returning to that subject in the future, because
there's
a Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon bit in the middle of that run, which we are going to tackle at some point,
yeah.
I believe. More horror.
More horror, yes.
More Garth Ennis, more horror.
Yeah, and more... you know what? I believe we mentioned Steve Dillon at least... 3 times during, you know, recording podcast, and we never talk about, you know, Steve Dillon art itself, and they really deliver in that run. Garth Ennis was 26 years old when he was creating that run of Hellblazer. It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
26 years.
I know. All these youngsters producing these great comics. What are we going to do? Yeah. Cool. Yeah. All right. So check out 28 Years Later, particularly on streaming when this episode comes out, because it's well worth it.
Please do.
Keep it going, because we do want to see the next two films in the franchise.
But it's a different director, right, for the next movie?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, we'll see. Great stuff. Thank you, Damien. Thank you, as ever, for coming on the Film Club. And thank you for standing in for Conrad.
Yeah, you know, it's a great pleasure. I got three T-shirts. I got two T-shirts,
yeah.
Which is, you know...
everybody will want to.
this is too late, or you can edit that out.
No, I'll leave that there.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Fifth episode, always a great pleasure meeting and, you know, chatting with you. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Damien. And thank you to everyone for listening to Mega City Film Club. As ever, find the links, including links to the Channel 4 show that Damien mentioned, at megacitybookclub.com. We are on just about all of the socials. You can find us there, including now on Substack. And if you've got a film that you can relate to 2000 AD or British creators, British comics in any way, then email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. If you know where we can find 28 Days Later in comic form, cheaply and easily, email us. If you've got a franchise that I should probably watch all the films in, then please email me. Or if you know where Damien can get that elusive 20th volume of Hellblazer for a reasonable price.
For a reasonable price, please, yes. Please do. I know it's pretty much impossible, because I've been looking for that for years, and, you know, there is no hope, really. But if you got it, and if you want to trade it for something else, I'll do that.
Get in touch, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And that will do us, as we come up to about 50 minutes. So that will do us until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book or a film. Actually, next one will be a book. But anyway, yeah. It's so from here in London, in our pink-lit porn dungeon, it's goodbye from me, and
goodbye from me. Thank you.
7, 6, 11, 5, 9 and 20 miles today, 4, 11, 17, 32 the day before. Boot, moving up and down again. There's no discharge in the war. Boot.